Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. It is an historic moment in Albany. For many years on this show and in press outlets around the state, when the legislative season rolled around in Albany, five words were bound to come up: three men in a room. The phrase referred to the fact that most budget and policy priorities were decided on by three men in closed-door negotiations: the governor, the state assembly speaker, and the state senate majority leader, all men. For all of history, not anymore. For the first time, the New York State Senate's majority conference will be led by a woman. After securing a majority in this year's midterm elections, Democrats in New York State Senate announced yesterday that Andrea Stewart-Cousins, who has been the Senate minority leader since 2012, that is, the Democrats have been in the minority, she represents parts of Westchester, will now lead the New York State Legislative Chamber beginning in January. So we're going to have to think of a new moniker: two men and one woman in a room, or maybe something completely different. If the state's top politicians, these three human beings, decide to open up negotiations to more legislators explicitly. But regardless of who is in the room, with the Democrats having a functional majority, the conversations around legislation and maybe the outcomes will be vastly different on issues ranging from rent laws to reproductive freedom laws to all kinds of things. With me now is the newly designated incoming State Senate Majority Leader, Andrea Stewart-Cousins. Senator, welcome back to WNYC, and obviously, congratulations.
Thank you so much, Brian. It's always good to speak with you and your audience, and I appreciate your good wishes.
Can you talk about what you think the significance is of your racial and gender first here? Beyond the symbolism, are there practical implications of it for New Yorkers?
Again, New York has really prided itself on being progressive, and I don't think that people realize that there had never been a woman in any of these leadership categories since the inception of the state legislature. So I think it's important, obviously, to continue to forge new ground and break barriers, but it's also important because women in New York are more than half of the population. So the idea that all of these policy decisions are being made with literally one half of the population not being represented in some significant way seemed to be really, you know, not a good way to continue to proceed. But of course, you know, we understand how these things happen. These are elections that put people in positions to be, you know, elected to other positions. And I am happy to see, certainly with this last election cycle, how many women are really stepping up in so many ways. Just so your audience knows that my conference will have a record number of women in terms of the Senate. You know, the assembly has more people in general. They have 150 members. We have 63. And in my conference, 14 of those people will be women. So we are making significant strides. And like I said, the practical application of that is that we will bring our experiences. And clearly, whether you're male or female, we have collective experiences, but women obviously have different things that have been significant in their lives and in their progress, and they'll bring that understanding to the table. So it's a good thing.
Do you think there's been a lot of implicit bias on the part of the three men in the room in the past? I mean, nobody goes to Albany saying, I'm only going to represent the men in my district. Well, I'm not going to represent the women. But then you get the three power brokers in a room and they're all guys. And maybe there's some kind of implicit bias, unconscious bias, that kicks in and makes policy come out less pro-woman, if you will, than it could. How much do you think that has happened?
Well, I think that's just the reality. You know, again, government really, you know, is only the people who are governing, you know. And I always cite my experiences, obviously, as an African American, as a woman, you know, there have been things that have happened to me that people don't think happened because it never happened to them. So it's not necessarily, you know, a willful disregard of certain things. It's just people bring with them their experiences. And if they've never had something happen, it's very hard to speak to it. And I've known over the years, you know, that there were policy discussions. If I were, you know, somehow privy to be part of, I would be able to represent a position that people had not experienced or had not thought of. And the other thing that's happened is that people have come to me. I remember when I first went into my office space, I needed to... you know, we went into this office space, and there had been male legislators in the office space before me, and I needed to have a handicapped accessible bathroom. Why? Because a woman, when I came in, a woman came to me, and she would not come to the male who were there before me. But she came to me to tell me how important it was that be there because of her and her needs. And again, sometimes people just won't tell people things who are of you know, another gender or whatever that they will tell you. So, you know, for whatever the reasons, I think, again, the more opportunities we have to have a varied degree of perspectives, the better the policies in the end will be.
Another one that comes to mind is that just under a year ago, you were being shut out as the Senate Minority Leader of negotiations over sexual harassment legislation. It was only the men in the room, and then it came out in a version that a lot of women protested.
Yes, I mean, and that's exactly... And I would have thought, and I know many people thought, that this was an opportunity to actually let me in because it was something that I could really bring some information to or bring a perspective that may not obviously have been presented. But old habits die hard, and it's so important, as they said, to be able to break barriers, to break, you know, glass ceilings or whatever needs to be broken sometimes in order to allow for, you know, a broader, more comprehensive perspective and result. So I'm happy to be part of, you know, breaking down another barrier and, you know, hopefully, you know, again, it's as you said, it's symbolic, but, you know, we want it to be substantive. We want it to make a difference. We want to be able to, you know, not be the first and last woman who has this position, but to, you know, inspire people to shoot for higher heights, and I'm sure other women will come after me in other very, very significant roles.
Is that sexual harassment bill, by the way, something that's on your agenda for strengthening, or in your opinion, is it good enough the way it came out that you're going to deal with other things now?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of things, as you said in your intro, that there is just, you know, a lot of things that will be on our plate going forward, but I certainly will re-examine those laws to see if there's some more that we can be done. I know that there has been a cry for people to, you know, ask us to have hearings, and in the minority we were not able to have you know, hearings. You had to sort of have them sanctioned by the majority. So we, you know, we will be able to, you know, have the hearings and you know, see what we need to do, if anything, to strengthen the laws. I mean, something that comes to mind right now is that, you know, I don't believe there's sort of an end date for when a person gets notification of what the decision is about whether or not, you know, their claim was valid. And I think there's like really an open-ended scenario that still exists. And I think you have a beginning, a middle, and an end at the very least. So I will definitely be looking at that. But there are many, many things we'll be trying to push.
If you're just joining us, my guest is New York State Senator Andrea Stewart Cousins, who was just named by the other members of her conference, the newly elected Democratic majority in the New York State Senate, to be the incoming Senate Majority Leader. She will be the first woman and first African-American woman ever to hold that position. And we can take your phone calls for her on that making of history or any of the issues that she'll tackle as Senate Majority Leader. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Or you can tweet at Brian Lehrer. And let's get to some of those issues, because, as I don't have to tell you, for many years now, the Democrat story in Albany has been something like this. Progressive legislation passes in the Assembly and then dies in the Senate. And here's a short list. We've been talking about this list all fall during the election season on the show. The Reproductive Health Act, which would codify Roe versus Wade into New York state law, just in case. Hello, Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh. The Child Victims Act, a bill extending the statute of limitations for survivors of child sexual abuse. Hello, priests who've gotten away with it for a long time, and others. The DREAM Act, granting tuition assistance to undocumented immigrants. Stronger gun control laws, like banning the ownership of bump stocks, and also ending cash bail. And I could go on. So what are your top priorities in terms of progressive legislation that you want to see passed, if we assume you can't do everything at the same time?
Right, and that's the reality. But you certainly had a good starting list. You know, when I think of, and I had the Reproductive Health Act from the time I came into the Senate in 2007, and amazed that in 19, and you know, I say this all the time, but in 1970, New York passed the first abortion laws that would allow women the right to an abortion. That was in 1970. And we did it with 12 Republicans and the majority of Democrats. Now you fast forward to, since I've been there and before, obviously, 2007, we could not, and Roe v. Wade happened in 1973. So as it turns out, 1973 laws are more updated than our 1970 laws. So to be able to codify what the laws currently are on a federal level here in New York has been absolutely impossible. Not one Republican would say that they would codify the 1973 laws regarding women's rights to choose. And they had always said, as you indicated, that, oh, well, why, you don't have to do that in New York. I mean, New York, I mean, it'll never be a threat. You know, nobody will ever touch it on a national level. And here we are in 2018. So, yeah, those things matter.
So
it
that's
for
one.
Women. It matters.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's one. I mean, you said them all. I mean, not all of them, but certainly most of them. We've been waiting forever, Child Victims Act. We have been trying to do, I mean, even Florida banned bump stocks. We can't do that here in New York. So I think we obviously need to move forward in doing things like that. Also, the background check. We have only a 3-day, which is better than what's happening on a national level, but there's a 3-day waiting period. And it turns out that if something is wrong, you won't know. You won't get information back in 3 days. It takes longer. So what we've been trying to do is extend the time period to at least 10 days so you can get the information back before you give the person a gun. So we will certainly be able to do that. We've been trying desperately for early voting, because we understand that limiting people's ability to vote to one Tuesday, you know, is just not a viable thing for people. We are a very mobile and busy society. So whether it's early voting or you know, no excuse absentee ballots. I mean, there's so many things we can do. The criminal justice reform, obviously, you know, the tragedy of people being incarcerated because they can't afford, you know, to get out. You know, the Dream Act you mentioned. I mean, we were just, you know, at I was just at the late Senator Peralta's funeral yesterday, and his wife made an impassioned plea about that. It was certainly a great loss for us and a great loss for the state, but it was certainly a bill that he championed, and you know, we need to get that done. I mean, we're a conference that will not deny climate change and its impacts. And, you know, so, and housing, obviously, the rent laws are coming up and, you know, affordable housing is on the top of everyone's list. So I think that, you know, we will have, and obviously we can't do everything right away, but, you know, New York has a reputation of being progressive and a leader. And I certainly, as we continue to build the economy, as we continue to strengthen our commitment to quality education, no matter what zip code you happen to be living in or born in, as we continue to, you know, make sure that, that people have access to health care and housing, you know, we will continue to fight for working people. We are, you know, the birthplace of civil rights, the birthplace of women's rights, birthplace of labor rights. You know, there are a lot of things to uphold. There's a lot of ways that we can demonstrate that we are progressive and smart and conscious of people's pocketbooks while we, you know, maintain our place as a progressive beacon.
Mayor de Blasio was on New York One Monday night and was asked what his priorities would be now that Democrats have control of both houses of the legislature for the first time in so long. I'm going to play you a minute of his response.
April 1st, no question in my mind, is D-Day on a series of very important things. I think you're right to say it sounds like there's almost a desire for everything to happen in just 3 months' time. That's not going to be real. Some things will make the cut. Some things will either go into the legislative session or go into the following year. The city's priorities, I've said very, very clearly, I'm going to respect, of course, whatever the Senate majority decides what the priorities are. But if they ask me what is most important to the city, it's strengthening our rent laws. It's the single biggest thing we can do to increase affordability and deal with the affordability crisis in this city. It is fixing the MTA. We have a chance, a historic chance, to get a funding source for the MTA that is permanent and reliable and actually make the trains run on time. This is the first chance in a long time. Mm-hmm. We've got to grab it this year. The following year is an election year again. It gets tougher. April 1st, when they're doing the budget, is the perfect moment.
April 1st, when they're doing the budget, is the perfect moment. So he put MTA on that list right up there.
He didn't put mayoral control.
Mayoral control of the public schools, right. Yeah. But he said rent laws, and he said MTA. And in the past, Senator Stewart Cousins, you've aligned yourself with the governor and shot down the idea of a millionaire's tax to help fund the MTA that the mayor has been pushing. Tell us what your position has been on that, and do you think that that might change in the new session with the new circumstances?
Well, you know, my position has always been that we obviously do need a sustained revenue source for the MTA. There's no question about it. My concern, as I stated, has always been, especially in light of this assault from the federal government as it relates to our deductibility of the state and local taxes in a place like where I live, Westchester County, you know, out on the island and so on and so forth. I mean, people are going to be extremely, extremely hard hit. So, you know, I've told people that, you know, my desire to raise taxes, new taxes is not really on the table. But again, I also understand that we have to have a sustained revenue source. So there will be, I think, a variety of opportunities to talk about on the table. People have different versions of how this can happen. And I also will say I have 15 new members that are, you know, are just going to be walking into the Senate for the first time. And we collectively have not had a conversation on most of these things. And so, you know, I will, you know, see what's on the table, examine everything carefully. Obviously, my members will be very, very involved in it, and we will be fighting towards finding that sustainable revenue for the MTA, because it's important for all of us.
My guess.
And, you know, obviously the rent laws, we're on the same page, and, you know, so I'm glad to know exactly what he's thinking. I think everybody's thinking the same thing. We just don't have the same answers right now.
And with the incoming New York State Senate Majority Leader, Andrea Stewart-Cousins, Renee in Manhasset. You're on WNYC. Hi, Renee.
Hi, Brian. I wanted to ask the senator, you know, there are several states in the nation right now that have revenge porn laws. And currently there is legislation in the New York State legislature that is stalled, revenge porn legislation that is stalled in the New York State legislature. I'd like to ask her if she can make a commitment to push that this year. So it's a devastating crime, and I'll take my answer offline. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator?
Yes. Well, again, I will certainly, there have been many, many things that have been stalled, as we've said. I will be more than happy to take a look at that. You know, all of the legislation, just so people know, that did not go anywhere now has to be reintroduced because we are entering a new session. So, you know, in the process of those reintroductions, we will have an opportunity to take a look at so many things that, again, need our attention. And I appreciate Renee for bringing it to my attention.
Ken in Nassau County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ken.
Yes, thank you very much. First, my congratulations to the Senate Majority Leader-elect. I have a unique question. First is that it's not only three men in the room that has vanquished, but for the first time, there will be two African-Americans and the governor in the room. For women and WNBE concerns, if not now, when? When will there be a real effort or a new sustained effort put forward to have women and minority-owned businesses get a larger share of the huge contracts that the state emits every year? And my second question, and of course you've got Letitia James in there to help you out with that. But my second question is that I'm from suburbia, and I know that you're actually from suburbia, although the governor misses that sometimes. We in suburbia are concerned about our state aid for education. You know, there was a great campaign that said that if you were elected, there'd be a great sucking sound of all of our state aid into New York City. What can you say to assure us that we can be protected for that?
Okay, Ken, thanks for the call. First of all, I agree with you in terms of MWBEs. There is an extreme focus, has always been a big focus of my conference, to make sure that minority and women-owned businesses get a significant share of all of the various contracts and opportunities that New York has to offer. So there will absolutely be attention paid to that. And again, one of the big motivators for me has always been education. And as I said earlier, I don't think where you live should be the determinant of whether or not you get a good education. That being said, Yes, I am from suburbia, and, you know, one of my districts, the city of Yonkers, has always been in the struggle in terms of resources and so on and so forth. You know, I understand what the campaign has been that the Republicans had. It's been a campaign of fear and fear-mongering, but you know, we have a very demographically and geographically diverse conference. So New York City is not the only, is not the core of our conference, quite honestly. I think Long Island has provided us with six senators. Mm. And certainly the Hudson Valley is quite well represented of state, too. So we will be working together to make sure that the funding is there. We're not taking funding away to give to New York City. We are, you know, I believe, committed to making sure that every child has a great education so they okay. can compete on the global stage.
We're almost out of time. Let me go through a couple of final things in short form. One is Governor Cuomo opposes single payer for New York State at the state level, but there's a majority in the assembly, and I believe you have a majority now of people who were just elected to the state Senate. Who would pass that bill, or at least have said in the past that they would be for that bill. Maybe that's going to change now. But will you bring the New York State Health Act, the Single Payer Health Act, to the floor?
You know, I think that everyone is very, very concerned about access to health and to not being bankrupted because you can't afford to pay for your health care. So it is a national conversation. It's a conversation that we have yet to have in the Senate because nobody brought it anywhere. So I could certainly commit to having get it heard, get it talked about, and let's do what we need to do in order to make sure that New Yorkers have affordable health care. But like I said, we have not even talked about it in the Senate because my colleagues on the other side just absolutely refuse to do anything. So the Assembly has passed something we have seen, heard. I mean, Senator Rivera has the bill, but it's never been given the proper vetting that it should.
And
on the Senate side, and that will happen.
There's the possibility of a vote for a pay raise for state legislators before you come back into session. And when the governor was on last week, he endorsed a version that would up the pay of state legislators, but also restrict outside income more as an ethics measure so you don't get influenced by whoever else is paying you to do outside things. Do you support that?
Well, my conference has always talked about at least some version of limiting outside income. I think we were looking, Senator Hoylman had the bill where we were looking at a very similar model to what Congress had, which limited it to, I think, like 15% nominal amount. We are absolutely at the forefront and have been in terms of ethics reform. This commission, I will say, though, and I've made it pretty clear that this commission was something that was agreed upon by the current majority leader, Senator Flanagan, along with Speaker Hastie and the governor. So,
it's bipartisan.
You know, I will see what the commission
right.
has
okay.
to say, and hopefully they will decide that you know, 20 years without any sort of increase is probably too long.
And last question, now that it's not just going to be three men in the room in these leadership meetings, we have some listeners on Twitter who've been suggesting new nicknames for the three of you now that you'll be one of them. Somebody suggested three peeps make a plan. Someone else wrote in three people in the steeple. And my question to you is, will it still be three people making all these decisions in a back room, or are you going to do something to open it up to more input from regular members?
Well, I said I ask that question a lot. I have not been in the room, so I'm looking forward to having an opportunity to be in that room, and then we can figure out, you know, whether the room works or doesn't work. I have always been, though, a proponent of you know, inclusion and transparency. So, we'll see what happens. But I am also happy, frankly, again, that the Democrats will at least be in the policymaking decision from the state Senate perspective, something that people have voted for over and over again and have not had the opportunity to have, but they will starting next year.
All right. Well, to the listener who suggested three people in the steeple, that might violate separation of church and state. I don't know. But Andrea,
I liked your introduction. You said three human beings
there you
in
go.
The room.
Andrea Stewart-Cousins, who's going to be one of those three as the first
human being.
Woman to be New York State Senate Majority Leader. Thank you so much for coming on with us, and it's always good to have you,
thank
and we look
you.
Forward to having you many times in your new position as that legislation
I can't wait.
Progresses.
Thanks so
thank,
much.
Thank you very, very much.